Okay, Alexander, let's talk about what's going on in the UK. And I'm just going to read three headlines because, you know, things are really wacky in the UK with these new rules that they're putting out there with the 19. I'll just call it the 19, and we'll see if we could fly under the radar of the YouTube algos for this video. But anyway, this is coming from the Mail Online, and it says, backlash over pathetic 19 tracing app as pubs and restaurants turn away customers who don't have it, despite faulty system blocking tens of thousands of users from logging their test results. Let me read you some of the bullet points. Pubs and restaurants have been told they must display app's QR code poster. Punters claim they have been refused entry if they do not have the app installed. Hospitality expert calls for trust from government, asking them to end curfew. That's despite major faults that mean the app cannot work on millions of phones. The tracing app requires a special PIN code to register 19 test results. And those who tested for 19 with the NHS did not receive a PIN code. And other Bluetooth devices can interfere with the signal, giving a false positive. Of course, this is technology. You're going to have a lot of hiccups. Here's a headline from Summit News. UK singing and dancing banned under draconian new 19 rules. Oliver Cromwell Puritanism returns. that's the excerpt from Paul Joseph Watson. And finally from RT, and this one is an interesting story, which says, more equal than others, UK Parliament U-turns on exempting own bars from 19 curfew following outcry. So this has to do with the Parliament pubs being open past this 10 o'clock curfew. So Alexander, what is going on in the UK?
Well, in a word, a farce and chaos. I'm going to say something, actually. I mean, the British are unrolling, rather the British government is unrolling a mass of contradictory and inconsistent rules. But it's probably important to explain to our viewers who are not in Britain that more and more people are simply not paying any attention. And unlike what happens in most countries, the police in most parts of Britain are not really enforcing these rules to any great extent. So it may sound very grim, and in a way it is very grim, but it is much more chaotic and muddled than it seems to me draconian, in the sense that the rules are draconian and they're incredibly confusing and they're completely inconsistent and they're wildly illogical. But most people, as I said, shrug their shoulders, say this doesn't make any sense, going about their ordinary lives in their ordinary way. And as I said, the police forces in most places are not really going about enforcing them either. What this shows is, well, first of all, there's one thing one has to say. I mean, the case count in Britain, as everywhere in Europe, is now rising. This was widely predicted that it was going to happen. People have been away on holiday. They've mixed with each other. Schools have opened. So the case count inevitably is rising as infections have grown. Britain was not really very well prepared for this, but that was one thing that was predicted. It is a known. It is not anywhere near as bad as it was in the spring of earlier this year. I mean, because the statistics you're getting are the product of testing. Testing is much more widespread than it was then. We're probably getting, say, perhaps 10,000 cases a day. If we're picking up about 7, but we're probably getting about 7, 10 to 15. In the spring, it was around about 100,000 a day in reality, or so it is believed. So one mustn't compare the situation now with the situation in the spring. But the government is unable to understand or cope with what it is going on. And it is being pulled in two directions. On the one hand, it's again terrified of appearing to lose control of the situation. So it is opting for very tough rules. It's putting scientists forward. It's saying, you know, we've got to really clamp down. We've got to have all these restrictions coming back. There's some talk about lockdowns, though this is very disorganized, and at the moment they're local lockdowns. On the other hand, it's coming up against the fact that people are tired, they're completely disillusioned with lockdowns and all of this, and they're resisting. And now there is growing resistance within Parliament itself, within the House of Commons. More and more Conservative MPs in particular are rebelling against these policies. What, to my mind, this shows is that at the very centre of British government, we have a Prime Minister who is exhausted. He became ill, as we all remember, in the spring. He never seems to have regained his grip since then. On the one hand, he's haunted by his own near-death experience. And on the other, he is lacks the self-confidence and the administrative and managerial skills to get a grip on the situation. And there is increasing talk now that there may be a move over the next few weeks to replace him with Rishi Sunak, who is the Chancellor, who is seen by many people as a much, much more effective manager than Johnson is. So there is actual talk of this now, and it's coming from within the Conservative Party. And it's not, I should stress, a remain or leave issue yet. But I would say that if it happens, Remainers will not be sorry. But we'll come to that in a moment.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading through all the articles about the new rules that have been put in place, and they just seem completely random. I don't know. Maybe there's some, you know, logic to it.
I can't figure it out,
to be honest.
There is no logic to it. And Johnson, I'm sorry to say, gave a disastrous speech. He went to a further education college in a place called Exeter, which was all about, you know, talking about further education. And then he took questions, and it turned out that he didn't know the rules himself. He got them all mixed up and got completely confused, and has now had to apologize about that. But of course, that's made a very bad impression, because it turns out that the rules are so random and so confusing that the Prime Minister himself, the man who is supposed to be imposing these rules, doesn't in fact know what they are. And it's reinforced the impression that he's out of his depth and he doesn't really understand what's going on and that he's tired. There was a long article in The Spectator about 2 weeks ago, which commented about how Johnson has lost his edge, that he looks tired and hasn't really got a grip any longer and doesn't seem to be fully in charge. And more people are saying this. There's more and more muttering about this going on. And I'm afraid events like the one we saw in Exeter tend to reinforce that feeling.
Who's responsible for the Parliament curfew bungle? I mean, that was also kind of a bad mess up, you know, the 10 o'clock curfew and then saying that the pubs and the cafes and the restaurants in Parliament or around Parliament were able to operate later.
I mean, I'm going to make a guess, actually, that probably isn't the government, but the people who run the Palace of Westminster, which is, you know, the Houses of Parliament building that you all see, the one with the clock and all that. They're civil servants, but they're not actually, elected. They're not part of the government itself. And they're a pretty awkward bunch of people. And they take their orders, if you like, from MPs generally. And MPs generally are notoriously a hard-drinking bunch. And, of course, they weren't prepared to let the, piddling rules that affect everyone else affect them. So I suspect that probably wasn't the government. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I can't imagine that the government would have done a thing like that. I mean, even allowing for the fact that, you know, they're disorganized, I don't think they're that disorganized to let a thing like that slip through.
Yeah, they took the PR hit, though, on that.
They did, always, because again, this is the other thing, which is that the government's PR operation, which used to be exceptional. I mean, that was one thing that Johnson really was good at. I mean, he had people like, well, Cummings and Legardo, who was another person. I mean, they had a very, very effective PR operation in the autumn and winter. That seems to have completely fallen apart. What one gets the sense that, as I said, they've lost their way and they don't really quite know what to do. And bear in mind, Johnson was seriously ill. It seems that Dominic Cummings, his chief of staff, was, who's a very powerful figure in the government, perhaps too powerful. He also fell ill at that time, as did Matt Hancock, who was the health minister. So they've all been scarred by this, and they've never really recovered their confidence, and they've never really shown a clear sense of taking things forward. And the other thing that's happened is that over the last couple of months, this alternative figure, Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, who was last year, I mean, nobody had heard of him, apart from, a small group of people, but suddenly he was made Chancellor back in the winter. And now he's grown into this enormous authority figure, and more people are talking about him being the right man to take over. So we have a potential alternative there.
All right. So three things that come to mind for me. You touched upon Brexit. Brexit is one issue. From what I've been reading, there's been two new conservative parties that have sprung up.
Yeah.
That have come into existence, and serious parties, from what I understand. So I wonder if they're going to eat into the Tories' base there. That's not good, obviously, for the existing Conservative Party to have two conservative right, center right, I think, is one of them. Another one's more right that have sprung up. I don't think that's good for the Conservative Party. And we do have some polling which shows that Labour is up. Is that
correct? Yes, it is. It is. Now let's deal with these two conservative, these two sort of parties. The British electoral system is not good for small parties. You need to be an absolutely exceptional politician like Nigel Farage to be able to work the electoral system in your favour as a small party and to be able to change the whole political climate. I mean, it's only happened twice in my lifetime. One was this one with Nigel Farage last year especially, and then before with UKIP, when he basically created the situation which led to Brexit. I mean, he never established a big representation in the House of Commons, but he was able to lever his support in the constituencies to force the Conservative Party to adopt Brexit in an important way. And if they hadn't done that, the Conservative Party might have crumbled. That was one occasion, and then the other occasion was in the 1980s when there was a breakaway from the Labour Party called the SDP, and briefly for a few years it too seemed to do very well, until eventually it faded away. So the British electoral system is not kind to small parties. I think that if the Conservatives regain their footing, perhaps with Johnson, perhaps with a new leader, this will fade. But if things continue as they are at the moment, and importantly, if there isn't a satisfactory Brexit at the end of this year, then I think the Conservatives will be in serious trouble, possibly from these two parties, possibly from whatever Nigel Farage is cooking up. Because don't forget, he is always there. He is the ghost that haunts the Conservatives. I can't emphasize this too often. We don't have Brexit because of Boris Johnson. We have Brexit because of Nigel Farage. I know this isn't how it's said outside Britain, but that is the truth. If you understand British politics, it is impossible to underestimate Farage's importance in the political system. So the Conservatives are, still living dangerously on that front. Now, as for the rise in the Labour Party, What I was going to say about this, given the fact that we are now in a very severe recession here, I mean, very severe, much worse than in the US, by the way, given the chaos that we're seeing, that we've just been discussing in response to the pandemic, I would have expected, in normal circumstances, the Labour Party to be 10 to 20% ahead in the opinion polls. That isn't the case. There's been one poll that put them 2% ahead. 2%. Now, that isn't really very impressive. And most of their support appears to be coming from centre-left voters who went to the Liberal Democrats, to parties like that. So at the moment, yes, they're rising because they're capitalising on Boris Johnson's mistakes or the Conservative Party's mistakes, but they're not really breaking through. The Conservatives seem to have a floor of around 40% of the vote that they're not falling below. And that's really, if they have that, then I think they don't need to worry about the Labour Party too much. On the right, with other Conservative parties, with Nigel Farage, that's a different matter.
All right. Interesting stuff. We will be following it closely. Guys, if you like this video, click on that subscribe button down below. Smash that like. Drop us a comment as well. We love to read your comments. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation helps keep this channel up and running. And also go to the Durant Shop, pick up some merchandise. We've got all kinds of new merchandise. And we also have our patriotic legacy, Patriot Beacon 3, our favorite flashlight, or as they say in the UK, torch. And they are running a competition, Durant 20, 20% off when you put that code at checkout. The Patriotic Legacy website is in the description box down below. You have a chance to win a pink Patriotic Beacon 3, pink color for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And you can also win a Durant Magic Mug with the USA flag on it when you enter that contest. Once again, Patriotic Legacy, the link is in the description box down below. Make sure to use the code Durant20 to get 20% discount, and you will be automatically entered into the contest. It ships internationally, the Patriot Beacon. So pick one up, enter the contest, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Patriotic Legacy, and the Durant Shop.
Indeed so. And here it is. This is the Patriot Beacon 3. Alex called it a flashlight. That's what they call it in the United States. In Britain, we say a torch. But whichever word you prefer, it is the best flashlight or torch in the world. I say that without any hesitation. It's made in the United States. It ships internationally, and it has the most beautiful and powerful beam of any flashlight or torch that I know. I walked in the darkest places, and it provides this extraordinary clear light. You can pick out the most extraordinary details. You're in a dark of wood or forest and walking, as I am. It's marvelous. It picks out all the detail. You feel completely secure walking in the dark with your Patriot Beacon there, illuminating the path around you. And if you want to use it in a confined space, or you've got friends or people around you, you can dim it like that. And if you're walking along a road, for example, and you want to alert people that you are there, you can have it flashing, and you can see that's extremely good for letting people know where you are. Another way of letting people know where you are, by the way, or of calling for help, like I do sometimes when I need my dogs to come and look after me or return to me from wherever they are. You've got an alarm in the handle like that. Now, Alex calls the Patriot Beacon the Swiss Army knife of flashlights. And the reason is because it isn't just a flashlight. It does amazing and remarkable things over and above and beyond what a mere flashlight does. First of all, I said I like walking in the woods. Sometimes, you know, you get out of GPS, or sat nav or any of those sort of links. Well, you've got a compass in the handle. You can use it to get your bearings, and you can do it absolutely reliably because it is there. Secondly, it is reliable in itself because it is solar powered. So all you have to do is keep it out in the light. It's, and then you don't have to worry about batteries. There's no, you know, unscrewing and putting batteries in or anything like that, which, you know, I always forget to do anyway. All I have to do is keep it out in the light, and it's there for me. It's completely reliable. I don't have to worry about recharging it at all. Secondly, because it is solar powered and reliable in that way, you can actually use it to recharge other things. You've got a port there. So if you have your smartphone or your tablet or your laptop and you need to recharge them, well, you can do it. You've got a port there you can do it from. And it's also, you can use it as a tool. You can use it as a hammer. You can, you know, sort of, you know, do hammer things with it. Or, and I always carry it with me in my car, if there ever were an accident, if I were to see someone in trouble and I were to need to get them out of the car, well, all you need to do with this is you tap on the windscreen, actually not too hard, you know, on the corners of the windscreen goes, and then you've also got your seatbelt cutter, so you can cut someone out and rescue them in that way. So it is a absolutely wonderful flashlight. It does all of these things. It's also, by the way, got a magnet, so you can put it on the side of your wall or the side of your car, and it's there immediately accessible and to hand. It's also got one other quality, which you perhaps can get a sense of just from seeing, but you really have to handle it to understand it. It is beautifully made. It is incredibly strong and rugged. It feels like it's machined from the solid. I mean, that's the only way I can describe it. And yet, at the same time, it's not heavy. It's just incredibly strong, and it just gives you that tremendous sense of quality that some products I know, many products I know, made in the United States, like this one is, have. And that gives you, when you're out in the dark, this tremendous sense of security. You know that you have in your hands a quality tool, and that gives you tremendous confidence. So it's made in the United States, Patriot Beacon 3. Alex was absolutely right. In this competition, it's in pink for the Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So it is a wonderful thing. It's a beautiful tool. It ships internationally. It comes with the amazing Duran mug with a flag of the United States, the great republic where it is made. And Alex will remind you at the end of this program how you can get yourself one. You definitely need to have one. And of course, just to remind you again, these are the best mugs in the world. This is our own Duran mug you can see there. But we know we've got lots with lots of flags. This is Greece. This is Russia. And any nation, if you wait long enough, you'll probably find the flag there. But if you don't, you know, just drop us a line and you will find it. And of course, we'll do what we can to help you find it. And we also have hats. And as you can see, this one has there the flag of the United Kingdom of Great Britain. I've just been talking about Britain. And of course, I live and am British. Here's another one. You can also see that's also got the flag of Britain there. And these are beautiful hats, by the way. And we've got truckers' hats and baseball caps. And as you can see, they're embroidered hats. We've got amazing shirts, also many with flags too. And that's constantly expanding. And we've also got ebooks and hoodies and other great things. Come to our shop. Support the Duran, support our channel, get yourself these wonderful things, and absolutely get yourself a Patriot Beacon 3. Alex will remind you how to do all of these things at the end of this broadcast.
You'll find the link to the Patriotic Legacy in the description box down below. You'll find a link to the Duran shop also in the description box down below. Alexander Mercurius, thank you very much. Till next time, everybody, take care.